Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. Today's guest, Eric M., has a story that sits at the intersection of trauma, resilience, and triumph. A story that reminds us that belonging, safety, and compassion are not just ideas, they shape a child's entire experience of growing up. Eric arrived in Australia as a baby, carried in his parents' arms as they fled Vietnam on a small fishing boat in the late 70s. His family survived pirate attacks, the loss of lives at sea, and months in a Malaysian refugee camp where food came only in handfuls. Yet his father never looked back. He looked forward, determined to give his son a future. When Australia finally opened its arms to their family, they found more than safety. They found community. Today, Eric is a STEM career coach, tech leader, and mentor, helping professionals break through the same barriers he had to climb over. Barriers shaped by culture, belonging, and identity. Eric, I'm honoured to have you share your story with me. What are your first memories of coming to Australia?
Kim, that's quite a few decades ago. But I do remember when I was small, staying in a place that kind of felt a bit like a hospital, not like a home, where when my mum and dad first came to Australia, specifically Melbourne, we stayed in a hostel. So I recall like mum and dad there, and I recall like people coming in and out to help us. And for me, it's kind of a bit surreal because, you know, I grew up in outer eastern Melbourne and probably one of the first Asian kids at my primary school. So growing up back in the 80s in a very working class suburb, I did experience quite a bit of, you know, racism and prejudice at the time. And those early years helped somewhat shape my resilience into my adult life. And yeah, those memories, sometimes they're quite confronting when you relive them and when you're by yourself in the schoolyard playground. So sometimes those memories do come back, but I think they were put there. I feel that maybe the universe put me in that situation to, you know, help build my character, my resilience, and also have a stronger appreciation of what, you know, my parents, you know, did for me. Basically give me a new life in a new country.
How do you think that resilience has served you in your life since then?
In a multitude of ways, Kim. For me, it ultimately is about not giving up. And, you know, when you do get knocked down, there's some learning in that process. And I feel during those times at primary school, I really understood, you know, who or what my true identity was. And for quite a long time, I really repressed that identity, you know, being a refugee, because that word did not exist in my vocabulary until I think my early adulthood. So for a long time, I felt quite ashamed of who I was, but, you know, it's my origin story, and I was really afraid to share that with people. I remember Kim, one of my best friends at primary school, he asked me, you know, so where are you from, Eric? And I said, oh, you know, I was just born in Vietnam, and I wouldn't share anything more. But when I got to understand the true end-to-end story, and particularly the last couple of years of, you know, what my parents have shared with me, because they shared, you know, bits and pieces when I was small, I really began to appreciate who I was, but where they came from and what they had to go through just to set foot in Australia.
What did they tell you, and why was it only recently you learned more?
So when I was growing up, they would share bits of information and they would tell me, oh, look, you know, we spent some time on a boat. We spent some time at a refugee camp. You know, we came to Australia because, you know, the government eventually sponsored us. So I heard bits and pieces of the story. But as a kid, you know, you kind of don't go into the details. But it was a couple of Christmases ago when I sat down with mum and dad and I asked them, Kim, you know, what really happened? You know, how did I get here and why did we leave Vietnam? So it took us into a really deep and quite emotional conversation during Christmas. That question was pondering on my mind for quite a number of years. And, you know, they took that opportunity to share what happened. And during that conversation, I revealed that my mum and dad left because, you know, the situation in my country of birth was getting quite difficult and the war had finished. And prior to that, they told me that they actually escaped, you know, the regime in Cambodia, their birth country, and they left behind my late brother and my maternal grandparents. So it's pretty confronting, like, what I uncovered. And really, I didn't discover that until I had a really deep conversation. So, you know, we had to escape by a boat and then we had to spend a couple of months at a refugee camp. And then, you know, something that happened that, which granted us privilege to live in Australia. So, yeah, a really deep conversation.
You mentioned earlier that you've felt ashamed, but also the humiliation, the bullying can bring, and then distancing yourself from a culture that you obviously didn't know as much about. How did that conversation with your parents 2 years ago impact the story that you now share with people?
I think for me, there was a strong realization that I no longer need to be ashamed of who I am, you know, where I come from, because during the early years, that shame, you know, which was brought by bullying, it spoke to my core. It said that, you know, I wasn't good enough as a person. And as you're a kid, you know, you're slowly forming your identity. So when somebody says that to you, it's quite impactful, and then it stays, you know, within your memory for quite a long time. And I think that's what happened, is that, you know, I had that perception that, you know, I wasn't good enough as a person, and because these people, you know, they didn't appreciate people from different races. So that was always circling, and it wasn't really until the last couple of years that I thought to myself, well, you know, it's a couple of decades now, and why am I still thinking this way? And I asked mum and dad that question about, you know, where I came from, and then they told me the full story, and I started to put together the pieces of the puzzle together. And then I realized, well, you know, there's not any shame in your own story. It's more about a celebration and, you know, a liberation of their journey. And that's why I'm quite passionate to share my story, because I know other immigrants and other refugees, you know, they've come from really extreme hardship, you know, worse than mine. So it's more of a way to, you know, honour them as parents, and to really just celebrate my identity and be appreciative of what I have in this world.
As parents, it's instinctive to protect our children from harm. Why do you think your parents chose to protect you in that way by not sharing that story with you earlier?
They were always working really hard. So mum and dad had, you know, jobs in factories. You know, dad was a laminator, and then my mother worked in the textile industry. So they were always constantly working. So their resilience or their love was built around, you know, supporting the family. And I felt that at that time that they might have thought that I wasn't ready to understand, you know, the full impact of the story. So hence they shared parts of it. And I, you know, value what they've done for me. And I feel that because there's a sense of cultural pride in there as well. Like most Southeast Asian parents, you know, they want their kids to work hard and get a university degree and, you know, get a good job. So that was the pathway that they laid out for me. And yeah, I think just looking back at it, Kim, in hindsight, it was a more of a way to protect me and probably, you know, save that conversation for a later day, which they did.
Eric, your life in Cambodia or Vietnam, for that matter, would have been vastly different to the one you've lived here in Australia. What are you grateful for that this life in this country has given you?
It's kind of fitting, the word grateful and gratitude. You know, I'm wearing it on my T-shirt now, and look, there's a multitude of reasons to be grateful. Like, the first one is not being shot at. I'm not living behind barbed wires, which was a reality for my family when they arrived at, you know, the detention center. So my dad told me after, you know, they set sail on a commercial fishing boat, it was crammed with, you know, other refugees, and all I wanted to do was they were in search for land, in search for a new opportunity. And when they arrived on the shores of Malaysia, it wasn't a warm greeting. The authorities at the time ordered everyone to get off the boat. You know, you could imagine elderly grandmothers and children, they were told to put their hands on their head and, you know, we were treated like animals. And then we got sent to a refugee camp, which was kind of like an open sewer pit. You know, when you get there, was no sanitation. There was like a jungle of people and, you know, just tents and everything everywhere. So that was life behind barbed wires for a couple of months. And my parents always shared that story, particularly at the dinner table, and what that reminded me of, because obviously when we came to Australia, we, you know, they had jobs, they had the opportunity to buy a house. Juxtaposed with that situation, my dad had to line up for food rations every day. So every day he would have, you know, bodies of people, you know, heads in front of him just to get food. And that was the daily norm, was to, you know, line up, get your food ration. My dad would quickly take it back. I was still quite young, you know, a baby at the time, so they would feed me first and then mum and dad would have their meal. So if you could imagine living in that situation and then coming to Australia where you're not behind any barbed wires anymore, you've got food, you've got jobs, you know, I've got a career to be able to go to university, the first person in my family to attend university, and, you know, I graduated with double degrees, which I'm really grateful for. But it's that sense of hopelessness which transforms into hope. And that is the true gratitude message, is like, would you still be grateful if you lost everything? Being split apart by your family, you know, losing a son, losing parents, coming to Australia with nothing but the shirts on your back, and then having a chance to start a new life, it's like being reborn again. I think that is one of the core themes of, you know, my origin story. It's about gratitude, it's about hope, it's about courage and many other things, but gratitude is a central theme of it. And yeah, I'll be sharing that story at a later date at another storytelling event, which I'm grateful for.
You've been sharing your story a little bit more often of late, but I'm wondering why you chose to share it in your work environment the first time.
I think for me, it was something that I felt very important for people to understand where I came from, because the Eric M that people see at work is, you know, the IT professional, you know, the person that gets something done, the person that's knowledgeable in XYZ, but they did not see Eric M as the former refugee. So it was like a way to share my journey and to celebrate the gift that my parents gave to me. And I remember sharing that 2 years ago. We set up like a diversity and inclusion committee, which I was a part of, and then I volunteered my story. And I remember after sharing that was probably for 20 minutes, I just got like 50 messages land in my Teams chat. And I was just truly taken away by the love, the support, and then just the encouragement. And I thought, well, you know, if people are going to be supportive of me internally here, I'm sure that outside in the real world, the public, they're going to be quite similar. And that was when I started to, you know, be a little bit more open.
You're a father now. How has your life and your experience shaped the way you parent? And what would you change if you could?
That is a great question, Kim. For me, it's important that my son Justin realizes what his grandparents had to go through to come to Australia. So that was a really important legacy message that I want to instill within him. And at some point I will write a book and, you know, share it with my son and my nephew so that they can truly appreciate and keep preserving the legacy of that story. For me as a parent, Kim, I want the same opportunities for my son, you know, freedom, the opportunity to education, and then just having the ability to make his own choices. I know that a lot of second generation refugee migrant children, they're under intense pressure by their parents. So, you know, the typical Asian tiger mum or dad mentality is you need to go to school or university, you can only be a doctor, a lawyer or a dentist, and you don't have any other options. But look, my parents were really supportive of my higher education choices, and they've always backed me in terms of whatever decision that I've had to make. And I'd like to apply that same philosophy. A funny story, Kim, was during Justin's year six graduation, they read out the student's profile and they flash up what they want to be in the future. And guess what my son said he wanted to be?
No idea.
Came up, Kim, it said Justin, and it said in his future ambition, he wanted to be a YouTuber. So, you know, everyone had a bit of a laugh. And yeah, I thought that was really cute. And I'm always very supportive of what he does. And look, there's no restriction in terms of his future aspirations. So I keep it quite flexible and open.
How do you ensure he's connected with your culture? I mean, especially being in Australia.
Yeah, so a couple of ways. My mum always used to, during the Chinese Lunar New Year celebrations, we would have a ritual. The Lunar New Year's Eve, she would cook a banquet, so the banquet would be placed on the table. But that banquet, initially, that's not for us to consume. That is to honour our deceased ancestors. So the way during the New Year ritual, they would pray and we would make an offering, you know, so that would be an offering for our ancestors to, you know, just to say thank you and have gratitude in the sense that our grandparents and our relatives were the ones who helped us live and create our family. So it's a way of saying thanks. It's a way of remembering them. And it's a way of doing a bit of a cleanse and a spiritual recognition before the start of the new year, the lunar calendar. The other aspect of preserving my cultural heritage is my son has been involved in lion and dragon dancing. So I really love supporting him in this space. Every time I go to one of his events, I get deaf by a certain number of decibels, but it's so heartwarming to see him practice really hard, training with his crew and actually getting out there and performing, because preserves connection with his Southeast Asian lineage or his heritage, because, you know, the lions and the dragons have been auspicious characters. And actually, Justin is a lion. I think that's his Chinese horoscope. So there's just something symbolic and serendipitous about him wanting to, you know, perform lion dancing and share his culture. And I think it's really beautiful to watch. And I love going to the events, whether they're weddings or the Mid-Autumn Festival recently. It's something really beautiful to celebrate as a community.
I love the fact that I live in a country that has embraced, to a degree, all of the spectrum of cultures we have here. And my family, some of the early settlers came from Britain, which is another country. My heart wants to give the little boy in you a big hug for what you went through. So thank you so much for sharing your story, Eric. It means the world to me. And I hope that more people take something from this and maybe reconsider any prejudice or racism they may still have in their heart.
Thank you kindly, Kim, for having me. And it's been an honour and a privilege to share my message and my journey. So thanks kindly again.
Tech leader, mentor and STEM career coach, Eric M., whose journey teaches us something profound. Shame can silence a child, but compassion can restore their voice. What his family endured is unimaginable to most of us. Yet the message that emerged, the one he now carries into every school, workplace, and coaching conversation, is simple. Belonging saves lives. You'll find links to Eric's work, coaching platforms, and community initiatives in the show notes. I can't encourage you enough to connect with him, especially if you're raising, teaching, or leading the next generation of brave thinkers. Because what we teach our children about inclusion may be the difference between surviving and thriving. I look forward to joining you next week with another powerful story. Until then, be kind and be the change you want to see in the world.